Citizen Lobbyist has been on vacation, and she's back here now. Well, on vacation. She's been working hard, doing some other stuff.
We took 4th of July off.
Yeah. Okay. So you're back here, and you're going to be talking a bit about the kinds of things that we're doing.
Right. Well, I don't know if taking the time off was really all that taking the time off. The last assembly meeting was a very lengthy meeting, and it was such a long meeting that we had to break up the post on the blog into two parts to serve it up, because there was just so much information there that needed to get out to the public. And so it was, we did a lot of writing during that time. But yes, it was held on a Thursday. The assembly normally meets on Tuesday, but because of some juggling in the summer schedule, they pretty much don't meet as much in the summer. No, most bodies don't meet as much in the summer, so they meet a lot during the budget season, and then they meet during June, and then they try to back off a little bit into the fall. And so they had two meetings in June, and this beginning one in July just ended up with a very, very long schedule.
Right. I'm thinking, you know, that meeting in that new place, it was very interesting. We'd been sort of looking forward to seeing how the assembly would deal with the new location.
Right. It's a whole new seating arrangement. Instead of the horseshoe, where, you know, pretty much have a bird's eye view of everybody and you're very close at the school district, it's a long, you know, assembly, much like what you see at the Anchorage assembly, and mayor being in the middle. So I think it does turn things around a little bit. And of course, there was one assembly member teleconferencing in, Mr. Arvin. And I know as a listener, it was hard to hear Mr. Arvin's testimony. So I'm thinking those are some things that they're still working out. But it just seemed like it put everybody a little bit off their game, just trying to get used to the microphones and having to turn them on and having to turn them off. And the whole thing of standing to testify. And once your 3 minutes are up, your mic's dead. And
that's right.
So that really, I think, there was a lot of testifiers for that meeting, so that brought a whole new thing into it, too.
Right. In years past, many years ago, those who remember the Catholic Church's changing situation where the service was conducted at a Catholic Mass with the priest facing the altar and away from the congregation one way. And then there was a turnaround where the service is performed with the celebrant facing the audience. And in some respects, there's a similarity in when you change the way in which an audience is included in the process. And that would be probably something to think about. You know, this is the assembly's meeting. On the other hand, it's also the community's meeting. The assembly happens to be conducting this meeting, but there are people who feel that the audience must be there. The community actually must be there. And, in fact, I think that's why we have Open Meetings Act regulations to say this isn't just a group of people that have been selected and they can go off into a corner and conduct business.
Right, and I think that goes back to that argument that I think is a fine one, that local governing really affects people more intimately than on the national. We all like to get together and kibitz about what's going on nationally, because that's where all the media goes. But really, decisions that are made locally really probably impact us more. And it is not a normal thing for people to go out and go to an assembly meeting. They normally show up when there is an issue on the agenda that affects them directly. Having the proper place for that to take place is pretty important. And, you know, this is right now they're using the school district had the foresight to be able to build this new well, it's not a new, it's a rehab gymnasium in the district building, and they scratched together some funds and kind of put it together and just in time, because not only are they using it for their own school board meetings, which means their former place in the Palmer High School can be turned into a learning center and back to the classroom, which is where we want our kids, you know, to have room. They also are using it for their their development center, so they now don't have to rent Menard or a litany of other places trying to get teachers together for personal development. So it really is fitting the bill. It was kind of just in time because the Borough Building, if you've been by, is just in total disarray as they try to put on their addition. And their addition will be somewhat similar to what they're occupying now in a more assembly-like atmosphere. There were so crammed and jammed for so long in that basement of that building, and it just wasn't very open for spectators. So I'm hoping that this new facility will lend itself to people being more comfortable to turn out for assembly meetings and get involved in their government.
Okay. So now down to the nitty-gritty.
Right. Well, we got that out of the way. Well, there was a lot of talk about the ferry, that pesky ferry, and what are we going to do with the ferry? The Frontiersman has covered this pretty well, how we got here with accepting funds from the federal government to build a ferry, which everybody, it's been kind of in the works for around 15 years. In fact, Assemblyman Solomon, who was mayor during the time this kind of all got lit off, talks about that often, that it's been going through these paces for quite some time. And everybody has been on board along the line. We've been accepting huge amount of monies from the federal government with the military to build this new prototype ferry, and now it's done. One little detail has been left out that is really a fly in the ointment. There has never really been, other than kind of a handshake agreement with the city of Anchorage, where to dock on the other side. And so now this manager, who's been on the job for about a year, that's been kind of his top priority, is to figure out, what are we going to do with this ferry now that it's done? The Navy now wants to hand it over. Now it's our turn to pay for it. They've been allotting money, some $900,000 each month to try to pay for it. Its expenses, it sits in Ketchikan. And now they want to know, what do we do? So the manager gave a quite long report during his turn to talk about what the possibilities are. You know, there are a lot of people like the Naval Research Center that would love to have it, but they'd like to give them another $2 million to operate it. There's some talk of turning it over to private companies where they find some people to use it, some customers, and that maybe we'll make some money off of that. But it also goes back to this grant funding and what they require. The federal government is very clear on what they require for the borough to do, and it's to transport passengers. So there's a lot going on with that. There's a lot of moving pieces. The borough is trying to work with the federal government to see if they can get off the hook for the grant money. They're trying to come up with all of these ways that they might, cut the expenses down. So it is a sort of a big floating anchor out there. And we covered it pretty in depth on the blog. And so it was quite the centerpiece of the last assembly meeting.
Yeah, and the clock is ticking. I mean, that's the the clock is ticking. It's, and you're sitting in the taxi, and you want to get to a destination, which is a place where the ferry will be.
Right, and I think something they don't talk about very often that kind of concerns me is that, how does this look to the federal government when we want to do another big project? You know, that's one of the talk. What if we just scrap it? What if we just, give it back, or what kind of any of those results has got to reflect on next time we go to the federal governments with some great idea, and they're going to say, hey, about that ferry. So I think there a lot of energy is going to trying to figure out what is the best resolve to it. I know Mr. Moosey, the manager, has been working tirelessly on this. And you're going to hear a lot more, see a lot more arm waving, a lot more shouting, finger pointing, and screeching, because that's now big taxpayer money that's going out every month, and it's an unknown, like you say. How does it end? When do we have to quit paying for it? And it does not sound like putting it in service is the option at this point. So I guess we'll see, get another update at the next assembly meeting. They've only been funding it a month at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suspect Mr. Moosey will be covering that during his manager's report next Tuesday.
Okay, well, thank you. That's a, in terms of being the big item in the room, in many ways, that's a very, very real thing. I know sometimes when we've been talking about the impact of changes in some of the ordinances, we look down the road, and in fact, I've heard people say, "Well, we'll throw that out and see how it works." Mm-hmm. And so there's some thought that maybe a change here or there would be bad or good or whatever. But this one is in that category of being very real. I mean, there is a specific thing. It's called the ferry, and there are dollar amounts that are flowing out, and it's in that category of something has to be done.
Right, and you know that we have to kind of remember that there were a lot of people on board for this ferry. It was kind of looked at as the precursor to the bridge, and
right.
A lot of that has kind of moved around. All those pieces have moved, and now there's a great amount of energy. Hasn't been fruitful yet, but to have a bridge, and so the ferry's kind of gotten a back seat on that. There are a lot of people that were for the ferry that are now for the bridge. Now they aren't for the ferry, so there's getting a lot of pushback from that. It's a bigger project. So there is just so many moving pieces, and I think we're going to be talking about that a lot, and it is a great concern because we don't know where the money to support it as it is going to stop. And so we're going to be having this discussion a lot, I think.
Okay. So next topic.
Next topic was actually a pretty big topic, too. It was Jim Creek. You know, if you recall, during the last assembly, not this last meeting, but the time before, the Jim Creek Management Plan, some funding came through to get it started. Of course, this is a plan that's been sorely needed in the Butte area, sort of a management plan for 400-some acres of borough land that needs to be designated on what their usage of it, and they've been waiting quite a long time. There's a lot of conflict in that area from motorized and non-motorized users, and they've been begging for the plan to get going. So they put some money out there for it. At the kind of at the final hour of that particular meeting, Mr. Arvin was able successfully to insert the motorized into the title. So instead of being the Jim Creek master plan, it was now the Jim Creek Motorized Master Plan. And this, of course, upset a lot of non-motorized users who felt that they were being left out. A resolution was brought back to the table to clarify the scope more. That would make it very, very clear that non-motorized was part of the plan, just because the title had been changed, but that the intent was to have sort of a multiple users be able to use it, and some clarification there to make sure that that planning process went through. So that was a pretty contentious thing. It brought a lot of testimony out. Of course, the motorized people would like to protect their intent to keep it motorized, and the non-motorized people were there to testify that, you know, it's just a huge conflict, the two don't mix. And then caught in the middle was borough staff, who you know, kind of went with the ball in the planning process and said, hey, the title said motorized, that's the way we've been doing it, and that's what our plan has been, and until you tell us otherwise, then...
Well, now, that's just to be specific here, previous to that change of title, the staff had been working on a plan that was all-encompassing.
Multi-use.
Right.
Right.
And because that's the interesting thing. There have been drafts, et cetera, and they've had sections that have dealt with multi-use, non-motorized, motorized, et cetera, so that anyone reading over the materials would have seen that the work to that point had obviously been focused on multi-use.
Right.
So changing the title is one of those tail-wagging-the-dog type of things.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a lot of discussion on it, and at the very end of the day, the resolution to actually put forth some language that would clarify it failed, but the mayor and the couple members of the assembly thought that staff now had the intent right, and so we'll see how it goes. The planning process has started. I've heard they've had a couple of meetings now, and I'm sure you're going to hear back from both user groups to see how that goes down the bunny trail.
Or if not the bunny trail, the four-wheeler.
Oh, right. Yeah, the multi, right. Yeah, multi-use trail, hopefully. Yeah. Then another big issue came up concerning farmland. We were kind of looking forward to this. The School Site Selection Committee is looking currently for another Palmer Elementary School, which will be within after the five-year moratorium is over. We've had these other schools built, trying to get a hold, ahead of the ball here. So they're trying to select some land. Of course, land is becoming short supply. Borough would like to set aside land for public use so that we're not buying back land, which has been sort of an expensive lesson that other places have learned, and the borough sadly is learning that in some cases too as they search for property for public facilities. And the farmers were pretty upset about one particular parcel that seemed to be at the top, which was right in the middle of farmland. So the mayor brought forth a resolution basically that said that the assembly should have a second look if he, being a farmer himself, understands the importance of good agricultural land, how important it is to this area, and he wanted a resolution that said that we shouldn't be using farmland for public use without the assembly really taking a second look to make sure that there isn't more suitable land. And there was quite a pushback on this, kind of surprised me, even though the farmers did come out and testify for it. It seemed like something that seemed fairly reasonable, but at the end of the day, Mr. Arvin and a few of the other more conservative members felt that that was just not necessary, that it was hamstringing the assembly to where they should be putting land or putting facilities, and it failed with only the mayor, of course, who can't vote, but who brought it forward, and the only assembly member that actually supported it was Mr. Keough. So that was sort of an interesting combination, and we'll see what happens with that. I think that the mayor was sort of disappointed himself, and we'll see if he brings it back in some other way and that it's addressed. And of course, you know, farmland is just uniquely important to our area. We have the only class two soils in all of Alaska, and farming is having quite a big comeback in the whole country right now. There's a lot of places that, as I did my research for the blog, it's an amazing amount of places that are now being turned back into farmland with the help, sadly, of some foreclosure properties, but they're retoiling it because they're doing more smaller, sure, more closer farms.
And the danger here has been historically that going south out of Palmer, in particular, the vast area of the Springer system, which has been utilized as farmland for many years, and is under attack, if I can phrase it that way, by two elements. One, obviously, development, housing developments that gobble up some land. And also, coming from the south in particular, the extension of gravel pits.
Right, and this is the concern of the farmers. They feel that you put a school in the middle of all of the farmland, and that, you know, what naturally comes is subdivision. So little by little, you know, farmers will sell off their land, and that will be the end of farming. And they certainly don't want to stand in the way of any property owner wants to sell a piece of property, but they just want the borough to be diligent about where they put these facilities so they don't contribute to that. And so we'll see. Again, this is, I think, something that may come back and get a second look at, and we'll see what maybe it will even be addressed at this next assembly meeting.
Okay.
So the next big item was the fourth resolution in support of Kabata, the bridge between the Kinnickarm Bridge between Point McKenzie and Anchorage. And this got quite a bit of discussion just because it's the fourth one, and people are beginning, a couple members of the Assembly are kind of trying to figure out why are we keep passing these resolutions, which are often referred to resolutions in general as memos to ourselves. So that got a little bit of discussion.
So who was in the lead here on this?
Mr. Particular? Arvin brought it forward once again. Okay. And, of course, he's got a lot of support by Mr. Culligan and the mayor and pretty much everybody. And the rationale for it was that the Alaska Municipal League will be meeting in Bethel in August. And, of course, this is a league of just about all the municipalities around the state who get together and commits and talk about issues that they want to support. And oddly enough, this was also the organization that the mayor wanted vetoed the budget to belong to because he didn't feel that they support what the intent of this assembly is enough. Mr. Arvin was with him on that, although it did fail. And they do belong to this organization, and but they are believing that they need this resolution to see if Kabata is supported by the Alaska Municipal League. And so there was quite a lot of talk about that. It was brought up that they had spent an extra $30,000 in lobbying this year, just specifically for a different lobbyist to lobby for the bridge. Mr. Keogh wanted some answers as to did that happen? Did anything happen from that? Do we have a report? Apparently there wasn't. So in the end, no big surprise, they did pass yet another resolution in support of the Kabata Bridge. So they had a conversation about $95,000 being transferred over to the Economic Development Department to use for economic development within the borough. They gave kind of a short little speech about the importance of it. Nothing very specific about how they were going to slice the pie up or where it was going to go. Of course, this assembly is very big on economic development, and they have a lot of faith in this relatively new economic development director that they have, and they want to give him the tools to do it. So without too much fanfare, he was given the assurance he would have a budget to do that. The Small Business Development Center came out to testify for it. They, of course, facilitate a lot of small business training and seminars and such, and they want to make sure that they get a little support from that as they try to find funding. The mayor let them know they certainly weren't going to get all of it. But again, it's kind of unclear how it's going to be spent, but they did authorize this $95,000 to be transferred into that department. So that was that.
Well, this is kind of interesting. Is there a just a quick question here? Many listeners out there, and we know that not so long ago, a rather comprehensive study was done that involved members of the community and a report given, which was a plan for economic development. In any of this, is there any, and many people felt that this was going to be a way to actually move forward by looking at everything comprehensively, not just doing a ferry here, a bridge there, or whatever, but to take a look and to involve the community in this process. But I've not been hearing very much reference to that plan. Anything at all here, or is it?
Not really. The development director has spoke about it a couple of times. This is kind of a quandary with the assembly right now. They are all are very pro-development, and I think the manager has spoke to this, is that they have a lot of conflicting goals. Because when you send this long list, we all sort of identify with the fact that we have a lot of needs. But when you have this long list of priorities, which one goes first? And they kind of keep changing it up. which is the shining object of the day, I think. And this strategic plan was a real big deal when it was passed. I think the plan cost the borough somewhere around $100,000 to develop. It involved a numerous amount of stakeholders from just all across. And like any plan, the first thing people said was, oh, it's, you know, that we're very optimistic about this, but you know what plans do? They get set on the shelf, and the most important part of the plan is implementing it. And that development director is now gone. The assembly has turned over a bit since that strategic plan was set out, and it doesn't get really looked at very much. This assembly seems to have their own plan, and that's more what they refer to. That this particular set of money didn't get talked about any particular element of that plan being moved forward. It was sort of generalities of, yes, we need to get economic development going and we need funds to do it. And that was kind of the end of the conversation. So I would hope that we get kind of a well baby check as we go and ask for the development director to weigh in and see how that money is being spent and what kind of results that we get. Of course, you know, they've changed things up in the assembly this time since this mayor has taken over, and they no longer have staff reports. It was pretty common over the years that when something came forward, you'd have a staff report and an update, and there was a lot more staff in the room. Well, this is a very pared down staff in the room assembly anymore, so I think it'll have to be something that they request of the manager, you know, to give them an update as to how these funds are being spent. I will say, too, that I know Mr. Culligan has been very insistent upon them having another goal-setting meeting, and it just hasn't, they haven't been able to pin down a time. He is concerned, and I think he's got good reason to be concerned, that they have everything pounded out before you know, the federal budget comes out so that they can know what their federal priorities are. And of course, you know, there's going to be a flurry of campaigning here. And so when the legislature does get back to business at the beginning of the year, they're going to be sort of behind the eight ball in getting information. So he wanted to meet immediately after the budget, and he didn't get any support on that. And I think they've pushed it off to the end of August or September with no real firm date. So maybe we'll get a little more of a glimpse what their priorities are and if their goals have changed and how they plan to, you know, move forward on those things once they have that meeting.
And that's, of course, one of the logistical issues. When you have an election coming up in the fall that could change a number of the players, each time you commit an assembly early on to a set of goals, which are going to be then implemented in that year, in particular, you've got moving targets here. You have a legislature that's likely to have some change. You have an assembly that could have some change. And so once you set down your plan with goals before the fall, and then you have to have people who are willing to either implement what was set by another group of people or be very careful as you change those goals as you move forward.
Right. Yeah, that's totally true. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's just the way the game plays.
Right. So it could totally, with three seats up on the assembly this session and the mayor's seat up, it could dramatically change over that period. And so, again, it's always going to be interesting. The last kind of big item was, and actually these things normally don't get a lot of play, but they had a couple of what they call LIDs they needed to address and talk about, which is a local improvement district for natural gas. And, of course, it requires a petition when a neighborhood wants to bring natural gas into their area. They need 50% of support on the petition. It's not a free thing. Each property, not owner, but each particular property is assessed a certain amount that they it's then need to be reimbursed to the borough. The borough actually goes and borrows the money, but the properties have to pay it back over a period of time. And we're seeing more and more pushback to this. The amount needed for signatures has kind of gone back and forth. I think when they started this process out, you needed 70% of the signatures, and they weren't getting very many of them passed. And little by little, it's now 50%. When there was one up in the Lazy Mountain neighborhood that got a lot of pushback, and it failed, which is not real usual that that happens. The mayor was kind of upset about it. He thought, of course, he's up from that area, and he thought that I think his words were that one of your neighbors got conscience stricken and went against the LID, and he thought it failed by unanimous discontent. So he was certainly not happy by it. But I expect you're going to hear a little bit more about how this process works, and how the taxpayers, the percentage that they're having to pay. I think it's safe to say, I think we said this in the blog, that NSTAR isn't losing any money on this deal.
Right.
And everybody's looking at their costs and how it's done. And I think you're going to hear quite a bit more about this and how that.
Okay, well, I think I agree, and we're going to take a moment for the bottom of the hour, a brief announcement, and then we'll be back to finish up with the citizen lobbyist.
You're listening to Radio Free Palmer, KVRF 89.5 on your FM dial. If you'd like to get involved with Radio Free Palmer, contact us at radiofreepalmer.org. This is your chance to invent community radio in Sutton, Butte, Chickaloon, and the surrounding areas.
Support for Radio Free Palmer comes from the Palmer Downtown Deli. Palmer Downtown Deli provides free Wi-Fi in an informal, casual, conversational environment, or for just individual solace. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner dishes, wraps, specialty sandwiches, soups, or desserts, including gelato Italian ice cream, are offered along with coffee, espresso, tea, specialty waters, or drinks. Music arts performing live can be enjoyed every Saturday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. A comprehensive summary of Palmer Downtown Deli's menu options can be found at palmerdeli.com, and phone orders at 745-4100 are available as well. The Palmer Downtown Deli is located on South Alaska Street. The Palmer Downtown Deli, supporting community connectivity and community radio.
Okay, we're back here after the bottom of the hour with the citizen lobbyist. Let's move on to another topic.
Right. Well, the other most interesting thing that was left on the table was something that Mr. Solomon from the Big Lake Kinnick Area District brought forth in his intent to revise or repeal the multi-family development ordinance. And he has now successfully got support to send it to the Planning Commission for a 90-day review. He think it's something that needs to go away. Of course, this is something that was passed by another assembly, I believe about 2005, who were, just worried about the quick growth of the valley and its how it might impair the water quality and the increased, traffic congestion and incompatible land uses. And they were trying to get ahead of all that. And I dug out the memo that actually passed it, and it was pretty interesting. I guess I didn't pay as much attention to it when it was passed, but there's a lot of incentives for developers on that to do it specific ways. And it's going to be very interesting to see what exactly, if they want to do away completely with the ordinance, which it sounds like is Mr. Solomon's intent, or if they're going to change it up. We've had a lot of growth since 2005. And oddly enough, at this same meeting was a set of neighbors from the Mr. Solomon's area off Hollywood Road that were quite upset, very well-spoken, very quite upset. They live in a neighborhood off there, quite a nice neighborhood, and a neighboring subdivision has a group of people, five trailers that have been brought in. They believe it's an illegal subdivision, and there's not adequate sewage at all, or sewer, or water, or electricity, and these people have a fondness for shooting guns, and they're very upset. They're upset about their safety. They're upset about their kids, and, you know, normally people don't come to speak to the assembly about the problem unless they just haven't been getting anywhere from multiple calls to the borough. So, you know, this is the kind of things, from looking at the research I've done, that this, the multifamily ordinance addresses in density. And so we'll see where that goes. But I expect that to get a lot of play. And I also hope that somewhere along the line they ask the question, what is the cost to the public and the citizens about rewriting all these ordinances? Of course, we know they've completely eliminated the tower ordinance, and they've the Title 27, which was the big subdivision code, they spent months and months and months rolling back and reworking. And there's a cost to that. And as much as, you know, we hear the shouting about regulation costing and it's costing us in development, I guess the other side of that question that I'm getting increasingly more interested in is, what's the cost of unrolling it? Hmm. So
another example is those people who have memories of Anchorage. At one point, Anchorage was small in terms of the built-out area, and places that now, if you go to the city, you go through and you say, well, this is obviously very densely populated. But you can also see the remnants of situations that allowed, at that time, both multifamily and other structures to be built without much regulation. And at the present time, there's a retrofitting need, or the problem that comes from such things as snow removal,
right,
access by public safety, fire engines, et cetera, very right, difficult to get into an area. And at the time, I'm guessing that many of these structures were being built, the argument was made, well, this was removed from the urban center of Anchorage.
Right.
And I think that's the difficulty of having people be able to see that by allowing pretty much unfettered growth and placement of property and development, that it in an area that seems to be far away from things, that over time that changes.
Right.
And finding that balance, that sweet spot that says, okay, here are some basics that we really need to pay attention to. Earlier, I've talked about road building, for example, and many people know that road building is very expensive.
Right.
So there tends to be very often a push toward doing the basic road. We don't need a high-quality road to go into a certain area, and that's possibly true for a short term, but very often my understanding in talking to people is that over time you need more than one entrance exit, for example, from a subdivision, just from a safety standpoint. And all those things are part of this whole discussion.
Right, and the along the line of the roads, the cost of maintenance. I know from living in the Big Lake area, I think 80% of their roads out there are substandard roads, and the cost of maintenance on substandard roads is hugely more expensive than one that is, paved and ditched and all those other things. So, we're seeing these road service contracts come with these incredible costs, and part of it, a large part of it, is due to the fact that we have a lot of substandard roads. So somewhere along the line, the burden of the costs do land, and it's a debate. Do we put it on the developer's side so that we it costs a little more to develop, and that lots are probably going to cost a little more because we're developing for the future, so that we don't have to address this later? Or are we kicking the can down the road and putting that on someone else to figure out and unwind and redo? This era of not getting much money from the federal government, the state having so many projects that are huge and on the table and how much money is going to come to communities and having them look a little bit more at how communities are supporting themselves. I think it's something that really needs to be addressed in a better holistic manner so that we know what the costs are on both sides. Right. You know, are we saving money now to spend it later? And so we'll see how that conversation comes up, but I expect this to be part of a very lively debate.
Good. So that next meeting by the Assembly is when?
Well, the next meeting is next Tuesday. Now, of course, this particular subject we just talked about will go to the Planning Commission for 90
sure.
days, so we won't hear much about that. There may be some testimony now and again. And on their packet, which, of course, won't be out until Thursday, but we do know from what was introduced, there's several forestry grants, kind of housekeeping businesses. There's an ordinance that talks about the sale of certain borough-wide properties under foreclosure for not paying taxes. This always gets a lot of people to come in and talk because, you know, they're losing their property for not paying taxes. It's always kind of interesting. Of course, you know, people don't lose their property in the borough for not paying their taxes for 1 or 2 years. The process takes up to 10 years.
Right.
But it's always very emotional because, you know, people have stories that they all want to share and the mayor has said in the past he really pushes back on people losing their property because he's not a lover of property tax anyway. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. There is a transfer of funds from a couple of different accounts for the Hatcher Pass Access Road. I'm already starting to get a few emails on this as different areas, different trail committees in different areas are very concerned about money being taken out of what they've depended on for support in their own trail areas now being pushed into this area, and they're worried about how that's going to impact their own trail projects, and I think that's a pretty valid concern. I also think this is the last meeting, if I'm not wrong, that they really can put things on the ballot and decide what they want the voters to cast a vote on. I expect there to be some discussion and about a change in our elections. This is something Mr. Colligan has been very adamant about, that he wants to see the borough elections be at the same time as the state elections. He brought forth an ordinance at one point to do that and got a lot of pushback because you know, the clerks across the boroughs and the cities got together and said, there's huge costs, and we use the voting equipment from the state of Alaska, so the borough would have to get their own voting equipment. The cities would have to change their own internal ordinances. It's kind of a messy process. I did talk to the state of elections one day about this, and they don't like the idea either, but we'll see. It looks like it could perhaps be an initiative that will be for the voters to decide, so I expect some discussion on that. I'm also hearing a few rumors that the mayor is going to have some type of a thing with a tax relief, property tax relief on the ballot. Something similar to what Anchorage did, where they, you know, take an X amount of dollars off the property right off the top, a deferment, and tax the rest. I expect you're going to hear a lot about that. And again, you know, we 75% of what comes in is property tax of residents, and only the rest is commercial here in the borough, which is completely different than it is in Anchorage. So somewhere that burden has to shift. And while it all sounds great for everybody to pay less taxes, you know, the needs don't go away. So we'll see where that conversation goes and how the math shows up and what other little things might come up that will end up on our ballot in October. But I think this is their last meeting to get that on for the proper notification for the clerk to be able to advertise and get the voter's pamphlet together. And so I think you'll see some discussion on that.
Right. So we'll be there, of course, streaming the meeting from 6 p.m. on. That's Tuesday. It'll be done from the temporary meeting place where the school district has graciously allowed the Assembly to come over and use their fine facility.
Right.
We'll stream that, and I would recommend that if people have not been over to that facility and have an opportunity, especially given this meeting's importance, go on over and listen and speak if you feel so moved.
Right.
Speaking about moving, we're going to next week move the citizen lobbyist to Thursday morning instead of Wednesday, and we'll be announcing that in considerable detail, both on Facebook, on our website, et cetera. This way, we're thinking that will provide a little bit of time, especially when some of those meetings, when we have a Wednesday school board meeting that lasts a while, to put together an analysis of what's happening. It also means that we will be rebroadcasting the citizen lobbyist later in the day, and we'll, as we roll out our new schedule, lay that out so that you'll be able to listen in the morning at 8 a.m. if you're up and about. If not, you'll be able to listen, I believe I remember it being at 5 p.m. in the afternoon, so that would make this work pretty well. And we're recording these sessions. We're moving on to recording not only the citizen lobbyists, but other guests, and we'll be putting them up on our website. So you can go to radiofreepalmer.org. Give us a little bit of time. They'll be up there probably by noon of the day the guest arrives, and you can listen if you want to listen some more, listen to it again, or you haven't heard it. So any last words there?
Two little things. I heard you speak earlier about the elections and the importance of people participating. There was an interesting article or a letter to the editor from a former member of the Port Commission about the importance of that and how to get information. It was quite a fine article from in the Frontiersman you can find right now. The blog is citizenlobbyist.blogspot.com, and we just received quite an in-depth article they'll be posting later today on this on Wasilla City Council and how that meeting went Monday, and that was quite a lively meeting too. So we had a little reporter out there, and we'll have that on the blog too. So we'll get a overall wide view of what's going on.
Yeah, in the meantime, the City of Palmer, of course, is conducting business there.
Right, and I did not get to that meeting last night, but I'm going to ask for a tape of it, so we'll try to disseminate some of that meeting, too. So we should have lots to talk about next Thursday.
Yes, indeed. I look forward to it.